The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thanks, Lachlan. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Great to see you here. Here's a quick quiz for you. Who recognises that man? Seems we're in the Winter Olympics. Anyone? Yes, sir?
Steve Bradbury.
Yes, Steve Bradbury, exactly. That was the 2002 Winter Olympics. And I don't know whether you've watched it. It's just a two-minute clip on YouTube of the race. And, of course, he got through to the final, and there's about eight people in the final. And then in the last 50 metres of the 1 kilometre, they all crashed. And I think that look on his face is gold. You just say, how good is this? He won the gold medal, went on to write a book called Last Man Standing. And at the back of the book, it says how he's only remembered for fluky luck that he won. And yet his story of actually getting to the Olympics, his hard work and injuries, etc. So I'm not having a cheap shot at him about the fact that he won. But really, the only reason we've ever heard of him is he was a very lucky man and those other six or seven guys fell over and he was the last man standing. So much of our world is random, chance. In fact, inside your outline is a part of the Bible from the book of Ecclesiastes. You have a look there, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes is part of the wisdom literature in the Old Testament. And Ecclesiastes, the little book particularly, is about looking for what really lasts or what has lasting value in the world. And you notice, here's what the author says in chapter 9 and verse 11. He says this about the randomness of life. He says, I've seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favour to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. So he's saying life seems so random. Success or whatever it comes to you, just luck. This is a great book. I don't know if anyone read Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. Have you heard of that? That's another. This is his best one, I think, Outliers. And what he's looking at, the idea of an outlier is someone who's a super high performer. And he looks at a whole lot of different areas like sport, music, business, computing, all sorts of things, people who are world's best. And what he shows is, surprisingly, sure, it's hard work, but mostly there's a whole series of factors beyond that person's control, like where were they born and who were their parents and when were they born, that influenced who they were and how they became world's best. Basically, he's saying so much of life is outside our control, so much of life is, well, people might say, just luck. Now, that's what the next verse in Ecclesiastes says. If you're watching, after he says, after time and chance happen to them all, there's a flip side to good luck, and that would be, well, random can work bad luck as well. So, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 12. Moreover, no one knows when their hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net or birds are taken in a snare, so people are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. You know, if you want to say the glass is half empty, the Stephen Bradbury story is the story of six guys who made it to the speed skating Olympic final and they all fell over. So there was one happy story and six, I could have been the champion, stories. And I don't want to rain on the parade, but so much of our world really feels bad luck or random. Things can go very bad very quickly. I mean, really, the most graphic or in-your-face example of that would be road accidents, deaths. No one gets half an hour's notice that they're going to die in a road accident. It happens. Now, there's the stats. 2017, there were 1,225 people around Australia who died in road accidents. Now, that's a terrible number, although... No, I'll just keep going. The interesting thing is it's only a fraction of what it was. It was about 3,000 in the 1970s. So seat belts and better cars and better roads have made a big difference. The stat that is also interesting is the number of pedestrian deaths in Australia. Now, yesterday I gave the people at Thursday Bible Shots a very bad picture because I had mistakenly used the American figures. So I told them yesterday there's 4,000 people a year die as pedestrians in Australia. Fortunately, someone had their eyes open, fact checker. I hope I said that right. Fact checker, and the real answer is only 152. So there you go. Just by doing that, he saved 3,800 Australian lives. But it does mean for 152 people a year, bang, you don't get any notice. It's just things go very bad very quickly. Now, we love our people who come to Bible Shots. We love you dearly. So please, on the way back to the office, don't check Facebook. Look where the cars are, okay? I think what's interesting is that we live not with that level of terror, I think I'm going to die, but many people live with a kind of a background level of anxiety in life. So it's almost like what you're born with. So here's some stats from Beyond Blue, the website about anxiety and depression. And these figures really are quite troubling. Every year in Australia, approximately 14% of the population, that's one in seven, experience an anxiety disorder. And then 2.7% experience generalised anxiety disorder, which I'm assuming is a more serious and life-debilitating disorder. Nearly 6% of the population will experience general anxiety disorder in their lifetime. I read the other day that it's something like one in six visits to a GP are anxiety-related. So there's so many of us who actually live with anxiety. And you might ask the question, well, why are people anxious? Here's a different angle on it. I've been reading Jordan Peterson's book. I don't know if you're familiar with Jordan Peterson. He's kind of the flavour of the month of the internet. It's gone viral. Some of his lectures, there's a million views. He's a Canadian clinical psychiatrist, clinical psychologist, academic lecturer, etc., professor, and the internet has lit up over things that he's saying. His new book, 12 Rules for Life, is the number one selling non-fiction book on the planet at the moment. But listen to what he says about it's kind of a reverse take on why are people anxious. Here's what he says. People often get basic psychological questions backwards. Why do people take drugs? Not a mystery. It's why they don't take them all the time that's the mystery. Why do people suffer anxiety? That's not the mystery. How is it that people can ever be calm? There's the mystery. We're breakable and mortal, and a million things can go wrong in a million ways. We should be terrified out of our skulls at every second, but we're not. The same can be said for depression, laziness, and criminality. So we're not all anxious out of our skulls all the time, but many, many people live with anxiety. Now, the question might be... before I go on, one more. The one thing I think that is worse than anxiety is anxiety's ugly cousin, and that is regret. And maybe it's just because I'm 60 next year that I'm starting to think about that a bit more. But regret really is, you know, that I've made dumb decisions or I've done stupid things or life didn't work out the way that I wanted. And here's the great... Anxiety always looks forward by definition. You're never anxious about right now. It's always anxious about the future. And regret looks to the past. So it's possible to live with either anxiety or regrets or both. And what does Jesus have to say about either of those? Well, let me go through. Here's the promise. Inside your program is a part of the New Testament. I just want to look at two verses today. That Jesus promises if you'll trust him, you can live with confidence. And that makes all the difference. Confidence not just about anxiety, but actually confidence about regret. And I'll come to that in a moment. But it's not confidence that life will be easy, and it's not confidence that life will work out the way that you'd write the script or perhaps the way you might have wanted. It's a different kind. Let's have a look at it. You can follow it in your program or on the screen. The Apostle Paul, as he writes to the Christians in Rome, what's he say? And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Now, I know we're not all necessarily followers of Jesus, and if you're not that, that's fine. It's great to have you here. If you are, let's think about the implications of this for those who do follow Jesus. And what I'd like to do is kind of pull those words apart and see if you really digested them and took them seriously, what difference would they make to our lives? So see the first thing, let's pull it apart. Notice he says, and he's writing to people who follow Jesus, and it's meant to be a great reassurance about life. He says, and we know that in what things? All things God works for the good of those who love him. In all things. And what the New Testament teaches, what Jesus teaches, what the Bible just assumes is that God's in control of everything. There's nothing that happens that's outside the control of God. Here's a couple of verses, say, from the Old Testament that say, well, I think this has troubled some people this week, so it's okay if it troubles you. But here, look, for example, the book of Lamentations, written by the prophet Jeremiah after Jerusalem was destroyed in about the 6th century. Look at what he says. He says, who can speak and have it happen if the Lord has not decreed it? Is it not the mouth of the Most High? Sorry, is it not from the mouth of the Most High that both calamities and good things come? So it's a decree of God that calamities and good things come. Or the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 45. Isaiah is a prophet about 8 centuries before Jesus. And God speaking to one of the pagan kings in chapter 45, he says this, I form the light and create darkness. I bring prosperity and create disaster. I, the Lord, do all these things. He's saying God's in control. God may send hard things. God may send good things. But whatever happens, in all things, God is at work. I'm very happy to talk about that in a few minutes at question and comment time. So God sends prosperity. God sends disaster. He's got it. He's got it all. Why does he do that? Let's go back to that verse. He says, for the good of those who love him. For those who trust Jesus, those who love him, those who follow him, he does it for their good. I'll come back to exactly what the good is in a moment. And then you notice he says, for those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son. And God knew you in advance. If you are one that trusts Jesus in how you live, if you honour him, follow him, want to live his way, if you're, you can call it a Christian, it's because God's been at work in your life. And God knew you in advance, and he knew in advance that he would call you to himself, open your eyes, show you who Jesus is. He's always had his eye on you, and he's drawn you to himself. Okay? And notice what he says there, though, okay, about God foreknew, God predestined, set up your destiny to what? See, now, okay, for the good, and what's the ultimate good? To be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. So quite literally, it's that you might share the likeness of Jesus, is what Paul says. Share the likeness of his Son. So you might actually become like Jesus. So let me just, it won't be as pretty as what Paul says. Let me try and just kind of summarise it in my own clumsy way. What he's saying is, God's in charge of everything that happens. If you belong to Jesus, God's in charge of everything that happens to you, and he's always knowing you, and he's going to use all those things that happen, everything that happens to you, to make you like Jesus, so you'll be like one of the family, with him as the older brother and you as brothers and sisters. That everything will work together. Now, that's great news, isn't it? But I want to say, it's great news, but it's not cheap or easy. Why? Okay, wouldn't it be wonderful to be made like Jesus? Yeah? Okay. Okay, I'll settle if just one person not. Okay, wouldn't it be wonderful to be made like Jesus? Anyone? Thanks. Just, yeah, okay, great. So what are the things you think, okay, when I read a gospel, when I read about Jesus, what are the things that just make him jump off the page that he's about his character? Well, he's humble, he's concerned for others, he's compassionate, he's wise, he's patient, he's faithful, he's strong. The list goes on. Here's my question for you then. What is it that'll make you humble? Well, it's going to be things where you learn, hey, you know what, I'm not the centre of the world. What is it that's going to happen to make you compassionate? Well, almost always it's that I've suffered. What is it that's going to make you wise? Well, it's often it's going to be learning from experience. You've been around the block a few times and you've seen some hard things, and that'll make you wise. What is it that'll make you strong? Well, it's kind of that whatever hasn't killed you will make you stronger. And so the one that keeps kind of popping up for me is, what will make you patient? Well, God will make you wait for things. See, this isn't a promise that life will be easy. In fact, it's almost the reverse, saying that there will be hard things in life, but they come through the hand of a good God who's concerned for the people who belong to Jesus. It comes through the hand of a good God who knew you, who's got things in control, and he'll use all of those things to mould you and change you and to conform you to the likeness or the image of his Son. And what that means is, in the middle of hard times, you can actually know what's... In the middle of hard times, you actually know what that God's in control. And it'll change... I'm just going to speak a bit louder.
Sorry.
It'll change... Is it down? All right. That's all right. It'll change the way you see particular events. So Ray Galea, who's a mate of mine, has written a book called From Here to Eternity. Ray's a pastor of a church out in Rudy Hill. And it's all about picking up... Russ, it'll only be... If you can be 2 minutes, if you can... No, if, yeah, if you, perhaps. Yeah. It's just picking up the whole of Romans chapter 8 and trying to understand the implications of that. It's a good little book. But he talks about, okay, when something happens that we don't particularly like, it changes the way you understand that event. Let me just read you a couple of paragraphs. He says, take a moment to personally reflect on the last time you responded to some situation in an ungodly way. When he says ungodly, he means different to how Jesus would do it, different to the way God would want it, in an ungodly way, where it was whether it was... sulking, sarcasm, or some cynical or critical remark. Now, pause and ask yourself the question. What did you want that you didn't get? Was it order, perfection, control, peace, respect, love, quiet, honour, praise, or simply for the lawnmower to start? Now ask the next question. Ultimately, whose decision was it to not give you the thing that you sought, and why? See, once you understand, okay, whatever happens to me, it comes through the hand of a good God who has good plans for me but may need to teach me things that aren't easy. It changes the whole way that you see life and means we live with confidence. A couple of quick things before I finish, and then you may have comments or questions. Can you say that changes the way you think about anxiety? What will happen in the future? What if it doesn't work out the way that I said or think or hope? Or, oh, that's all right. God has it under control. It'll ultimately be okay. What about regret? Well, regret, anxiety's ugly cousin. Regret, as you look back at your life, of course there'll be things that you do differently or they haven't worked out. Or, you know, that said that God foreknew you. If you belong to Jesus, God's always had his hand on you. He's always had you in mind. And God's able to take all of those things that happened to you or that you've done or all those regrets and actually use them and will use them to make you the person that he wants you to be and also to make you useful in terms of caring for others and serving other people. So you kind of... This actually gives you confidence about the future in terms of anxiety, but it changes the whole way you see the past as well. All right. Point being, why follow Jesus when the world has moved on? Well, as we saw in the first in this series, the world hasn't actually moved on. Christianity's booming in the global south. Here in Australia, nominal Christianity may have declined. Why should we follow Jesus? Well, it's true, yes. And that promise here today gives us confidence about the future. Mm-hmm. Could I just go through verse 29? Yep. Those God foreknew. Let me just find the text properly. Yep. For those God foreknew, he also predestined. What the New Testament teaches is that God actually knows who we are. God knows who we are before we're born. And that God knows, not just knows in advance, you notice there's two things, foreknew and predestined. God knew in advance who would turn to him, but God's actually predestined and taken the initiative to open some people's hearts and minds to understand who God is and who Jesus is, and that they'll want to trust him. And I think part of the reason that the Apostle Paul explains that is to keep Christian people humble. And that is, if you've chosen to follow Jesus, the reason that you've chosen to do that is not because you're better or more moral or what, it's because God in his kindness opened your eyes to see who Jesus is, how great and wonderful he is, and to be able to accept forgiveness. And so in some ways it gives us assurance that God will hold on to us, but it also keeps us humble that it's just the kindness of God that he chose to open our eyes. So if you're here today and you're not a follower of Jesus yet, and you can begin to see who he is and begin to see how this makes sense and this may be true, that's the kindness of God at work in your life, opening eyes and hearts to see who Jesus is. Yeah. Now, some Christian people are really nervous about that idea of, predestination. No. If God doesn't do that to people, people just happily keep rejecting him. So it's the kindness of God taking that initiative. It's a wonderful thing the New Testament says.
Question that came through was, if people's minds aren't sort of fully alert, maybe they've got some sort of a mental disability or something like that, How can they actually set their hope on God's grace? What does that look like?
Well, I guess it depends on what kind of mental disability or mental struggles people have, but God is big enough to meet people where they are. If I could just say, I know I've spoken about this before, but my mum was a wonderful Christian lady, and she loved and served Jesus for over 50 years. But eventually, in fact, the last thing I ever did with my dear old mum was read the Bible with her. But eventually she forgot all of us, she forgot Jesus, she didn't know anything. And so she didn't have a hope. Poor old mum was just a vegetable. But God hadn't forgotten her. Jesus hadn't forgotten her. So I think that Jesus will meet people where they are and with what you've got. Okay? Now, if people suffer from depression or some kind of mental illness, it's no different to any other physical illness. And to take medication that helps with mental processes and stuff is absolutely fine. So if I have a heart problem, I take medication for that. If I'm suffering from some kind of mental problem, to take medication that helps with that, it's absolutely fine.
Just another one that came through from the Okay. So how can we know that we belong to Jesus?
It's a good question. How can we know if we belong to Jesus? In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, the Apostle Paul says, no one can say Jesus is Lord, okay, apart from the work of God's Spirit. So that is, I don't think he means, Jesus is Lord. You can teach a parrot to say that, okay, Jesus is Lord. No, what he means is no one can say Jesus is my Lord, my boss, I'll live with him and trust him, apart from the work of God's Spirit. So the test, if you like, really is, do you actually want to live with Jesus as your Lord and Master and trust him and live his way? Okay. One of the other tests is, say, for example, you find it in Romans chapter 8 or Galatians chapter 3, can you call God Father as you pray? And that's all about, will you honour and trust and obey God? So will you trust Jesus in how you live? Will you treat him as your Lord? Do you want to obey him? And can you call God Father? So that's where it's done.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.